Welcome to Dead Man's Party. Nostalgic reviews from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. With your hosts, Chris, Alex, and the Ghoul. Who could ask for more? Don't run away, it's only them.
No matter what you say or what you do, we are reviewing 3 O'Clock High today from 1987. My name is Al. I am with the guy who has a switchblade in his locker. You could tell I didn't think this one through. Chris! What's up, Chris?
You and me, 3 O'Clock.
And we're with the guy who makes out with his teacher in front of his teenage student, the Ghoul. What's up, Pat?
Don't fuck this up, Mitchell!
Yeah, 3 O'Clock High. Director Phil Jonu, writer Richard Christian Matheson, and Tommy Zazolisi. Cast Casey Zayamesco, Annie Ryan, Richard Tyson. I'm not even trying anymore. Stacey Glick, Jonathan Wise, Jeffrey Tambor, Philip Hall, and John Ryan. Oh, and can't forget Sons of Anarchy fame, Mitch Peligi.
I looked up the main guy, Casey, to see how his last name was actually pronounced, because as familiar as I am with this movie, and he's also in Young Guns, I've never actually heard someone speak his name out loud. So I found an old interview with him on YouTube to where they actually say his, or they, the interviewer asks him to say his name, and it's Shamashko, which I would have never.
Wow, really? Yeah.
Shamashko, yep.
Oh, shit.
Wow. Well, see? Everyone's laughing at me, and nobody would have guessed that. 3 O'Clock High. This is about a nerd who gets himself in hot water with a new bully. Quite a bad boy. I mean, a quiet bad boy who challenges him to fight.
Quite a bad boy.
Is that what you thought when you watched this? Wow, he's quite a bad boy.
I didn't read that line ahead of time. Who challenges him to fight on the grounds of their high school after the day's end. Quite a bad boy, he really is.
Yes, he is.
So, yeah, this is our Richard Tyson weekend.
So bizarre. The Richard Tyson slash hypoglycemia weekend rolls on.
Fitting for Easter weekend. He is our Lord and our Savior, Richard Tyson.
He has risen from obscurity.
But pretty much.
On Dead Man's Party. So, yeah, you guys probably forgot about this guy, but yeah, this is let's talk about him for an hour. What is your overall memories or thoughts of this movie? Because I just recently discovered it, which is a real bummer. I wish I knew about it. And it's funny that this movie was competing with, like, all these, like, movies of the 80s, Nerds, the John Hughes movies, like, all this stuff, and it really got lost in the mix, because, like, nobody... This is more of a cult classic than anything, like, honestly, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's weird. So, I just randomly stumbled on this movie back when I was probably... I was 13 or 14. It was just on HBO one day. I had never heard of it. It was probably about 2 years old at that point. And I just watched it, and I was like, holy shit, this is really good. So, the next time it came on TV, I recorded it. And I would watch it legit, dude, all the fucking time when I was growing up. And it's just kind of a, like, nobody talks about this movie. You either saw it back then or you have no clue what this is. Because I've talked to a lot of people over the years that I've asked if they've seen this. And they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about, dude. But the people that do know what it is seem to love it. So I think it's killer.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't know about this movie until, so this guy that I used to work with mentioned it, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years back. And then he just, like, kept, like, quoting things from it. And then I was just like, I need to see this fucking movie. And then it finally got added to Amazon Prime Video, like, I think right before the pandemic hit. And it was on there. And I watched it, and I fucking fell in love with it immediately. And I watched it so many times while it was still on there. And then when I saw that Shout Factory was finally doing the Blu-ray, I was like, oh, hell yeah, finally. It's going to get, like, the audience it deserves. And yeah, so then I got that, and then after rewatching, I was like, yeah, this movie is a fucking cult classic, and so many more people need to see this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you only paid like $37 for that Blu-ray, right?
I wouldn't even be mad if I did.
Yeah. Do you guys notice as soon as this movie opens up that one of the three girls talking about Buddy is Lisa Simpson?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, that she's one of the cheerleader girls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like, Lisa's, like, my favorite character growing up. And, like, the fact, anytime I hear her voice, and if it's not, like, obvious, or, like, you don't see them on screen or whatever, it's, like, so obvious to me.
Like, Yeardley Smith or something like that?
What a weird name, yeah. Yeardley. Yeah.
So this movie starts off, he wakes up. First of all, I love how this movie is shot and edited, the way the cameras, the turning of the cameras, the quick cuts, the zoom ins on things. So it starts off and it shows him sleeping in bed, and it shows the clock and it says 7:30, and he wakes up and his sister says, that thing's been buzzing for an hour. I thought you were dead. I would have been like, gee, bitch, thanks for waking me up. You and can then walk she your fucking ass to school.
Yeah.
Mentions like, if you had a sibling, like, with their alarm clock going off for an hour, would you just not say anything?
And it's weird because they set that up as if they're, like, a catty brother and sister. And meanwhile, they are the complete opposite of a trope.
Yeah.
Like, they like each other. She's supportive. She's always on his side. It's not like the typical brother and sister relationship at all, and you would not get that in the least in the first, like, 5 minutes.
Right.
Right.
So he jumps in the shower, and then the main theme song kicks in, which plays at the beginning and then the very end, and I'm locked in from right there. The song's great. So the group, if you want to call them that, that did the music for this movie is called Tangerine Dream. Which apparently they did a ton of movie soundtracks back in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd never heard of them until a couple years ago. And I was listening to just some random movie podcast about something, and they brought them up. And I was like, Tangerine Dream? That sounds like a fucking snow cone flavor or something.
Yeah, it's.
But they were like really, really successful, like doing movie scores back in the day. And I think that theme song that kicks off this movie is awesome.
Dude, they have like 70 albums.
That's bananas, dude. I legit never even heard of their fucking name until probably 2 years ago.
Yeah, they're, like, really good. Like, they're very good atmosphere-y things. Like, they did the score for Near Dark, and that score is really good. Yeah, like, they just get fucking weird with it, but it sounds awesome. Like, especially, like, the – I know I was jumping ahead, but, like, the kind of, like, intense, like, quote, love theme that, like, plays during the English teacher thing. Like, that has been used – I think they used that for another. They might have done the score for Risky Business. I might be wrong.
They did. I saw that.
Yeah. It's fucking crazy. Like some of the high like profile things that they've been attached to for such a weird fucking band like name alone. You're like, who's going to seek this out? But oh, they're fucking awesome.
Right.
So Jerry flies out of bed. He's looking for something to wear.
his clothes.
He's digging around in the dirty laundry that's strewn all over his floor. Then he finds a pair of jeans under his bed, puts them on, goes to the washing machine. His clothes are sopping wet, okay? Takes his shirt out, sticks it in the fucking microwave.
Was he Uncle Buck?
All that would do would just get the shirt scalding fucking hot. Like, you would suffer second-degree burns the second you put that thing on.
he's just pure fucking chaotic energy. Like, nothing... Like, even though he's, like, supposed to be this great student, just by the way his room is alone, he's a fucking mess. He is all over the place. He just can't get his shit together. Just bumbling, like, fucking nonsense. It's hilarious.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of tells you why he's not one of the cool, normal kids in school, because he doesn't even have the time or the mind to dedicate any effort into something that would fit in with anybody else. He's just, like, a chaotic mess, like you said. And that's why, because he's not really a dork or a dweeb. I mean, his hair is kind of strange for trying to be a cool kid, and the sweater and stuff. But, like, other than that, he's kind of like a normal, well-adjusted person. He just doesn't seem to make the time for normal things in life that would be socially adequate.
Yeah, he's just like, he's like an average kid, but he's just like, he's just a mess.
We get to the school, everyone's just talking all these rumors about Buddy and how he did this, he did that, he did this to a kid, he did this to a teacher, whatever. And it's like one of those things, like these things you just hear about. And then, like, he comes out and he has this long hair, sort of, and he's with a leather jacket and he's 6 feet tall.
He's a fucking monster.
Did anybody look up his age?
Yeah, it's weird. Him and Casey Shamashko were both 25/26 when they filmed this, depending on what time of year this movie was filmed. Yeah.
Wow.
Richard Tyson looks like he's 39. But so, like, when all those kids outside the school are, like, gossiping about him, like, you know, he beat up the football coach and, you know, all that shit. You believe all that stuff, but then at the very end of the movie, after the whole Jerry thing happens and the credits are getting ready to roll, you hear those kids, like, exaggerating the shit about what happened with Jerry and the teacher and all that stuff, and you're like, okay, not all of that stuff they were saying about Buddy was true. That's a lot of exaggeration.
The only thing
it's like the telephone game. You tell one person, then they tell someone, then they tell someone, and it just gets out of control by the end. Yeah.
And the only thing that they really got right in all those, like, rumors were that he does not like to be touched. That was the one accurate thing.
Yes.
And for sure. a lot of people learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah. Jerry has to do a welcome aboard piece on him for the school, the newspaper or something. So he's at the urinal, and when he's there, there's a whole bunch of empty urinals, but for some reason, a Buddy stands like one over from him instead of like four over, which is weird because
you know, I thought that too, but he's actually over. There's one in between them.
Yeah, one.
Yeah.
But he could have been more, right?
Right.
And the weird thing is Buddy says to him, "If you're a fag."
He goes, "Hi, I'm Jerry Mitchell. I'm with the school paper." He sticks his arm out to shake his hand while they're standing
with cocks in your hands.
I know this is a little awkward standing here in front of the urinals, and Buddy doesn't even move. He just closes his eyes and says, "If you're a fag." Who me? No way. Like, that's the worst fucking thing you could say to someone back then, dude.
Well, in his defense, who goes to shake a man's hand while you're holding your cock in your other hand?
Right. The worst place to, like, try and meet this terrifying human being. Like, yeah, let me try and make friends in the bathroom. But that just adds to the whole, like, Jerry's just a fucking moron. Like, he just can't not get himself in these, like, situations. Just, like, doesn't think things through. It's hilarious.
Right, so then they finish pissing, and then they turn and, like, square up to each other and are looking at each other, and that's giving you the size difference between these two people to let you know how ridiculous this is that these two guys are going to fight.
Yeah.
And Buddy's like, you know, "What do you want?" And Jerry's like, "I've been assigned to do this stupid little piece on you for the school paper." And Buddy's like, "Why would I want to look stupid?" And Jerry's like, no. "Just so you know, I don't care if you do all kinds of dope and shit. I'm not anyone's narc." Like, where did he get that from? He's so automatically stupid. Accusing him.
Yeah.
Being like a drug addict.
Oh, no. I think Buddy said, "Are you a narc?" And then he goes, "Oh, I don't care if you do
right,
dope."
Right. He does. You a narc. He does. Yep.
he eventually slams his crotch into the urinal and flushes it like five times.
What was that about? Like, he just slams him into the urinal, and all that's happening is Jerry's shoes are getting wet because he just keeps like flushing it over and over.
And then,
he picks him up and slams him against the fucking mirror.
Jesus Christ, he fucking, holy shit. Like, I think with the urinal, he kind of pushes him in a little bit too, where it's getting his crotch wet.
Yeah, because he's pushing him.
Yeah, because then he says, first of all, the way that looks, I'm like, that was fucking...
It looks awkward. And this is all because he patted his arm and saying, oh, we don't have to do the story, and just touched him.
I love the look Buddy gets when Jerry just pats him on the
The slow look at the whole arm and hand.
I was going to leave this out, but Ghoul already went there, so I'm going to say it. That's the look I imagine Ghoul getting if someone puts a finger on his $50 40p copy of Above the Law.
You put a fingerprint on it?
You goddamn right.
Yeah.
How about the kid who was taking a shit, though? They show his feet tapping, and then he hears, oh, hey, buddy, and then they stop. But then at the end, when he comes out, that kid, because I have this as a note, too, just like, did they not get, like, the most, like, unique but, like, oddball-looking side people to be in this, like, movie as extras, as kids? Because that kid shows up a couple more times throughout the movie, and they're all just, like, so distinct-looking kids, but they're just, like...
Right.
There's something about them. It just, like, feels different than, like, a lot of, like, the John Hughes stuff where everyone's all, like, pretty and stuff like that. Like, you get... Yeah, you get kids who just, like, look like fucking kids do. Like, they're just all awkward and weird.
So, yeah, this is the scene that sets the ball rolling for the rest of the movie. He puts his hand on Buddy. Buddy throws him against the mirror. I don't like people knowing about me. You can take that newspaper of yours and wipe off your dick with it. You made me mad, Jerry. And now I'm going to have to do something to work it off. And Jerry's like, work it off? And I'm like, is Buddy, like, going to bend him over and fuck him or something? He's like, you and me, we're going to have a fight. 3 o'clock in the parking lot. So that sets up the whole rest of the movie, this scene right here in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Tells him if he's going to go to a teacher, going to run and hide. It's only going to get worse. After this scene, you're like, oh, shit, it's on. And the whole rest of the movie is basically watching the clock count down to 3 o'clock.
Right. The whole school knows about it. His friend is this really nerdy buddy of his. He comes up with this bright idea of stuffing a knife in Buddy's locker to get him thrown out of school. Like, out of nowhere, this kid has a switchblade. Like, why? How? How quickly could you have gotten this? It's a pretty good idea. So, the girl he drove to school is, like, freakily looking at him and stuff. Like, her eyes and teeth and hair. It's funny, like, this movie's very tropey in that way. Like, you got the glamorous girl who is the hottest girl in school, just like Teen Wolf, that blonde that was dating that jerk. And then you got the boof, like, this weird, short, black-haired girl who's into you, but you're not really into her. And then you have the teacher thing going on, which is, like kind of... It's not the first time I've ever seen it, obviously, but it does have, like, kind of a tropey dynamic to it.
You just blew my mind with the Teen Wolf comparison. I never thought about that with Booth and what's the blonde's name in that movie? Pamela?
Yeah.
Pamela Wells, yeah.
Are they the same actor, the girl who plays, like, the glamorous girl in Teen Wolf and the glamorous girl in this? Because I swear, now that I think about it, they look similar, though, right?
No. Well,
blonde.
I think
I don't know. It's been a couple of years since I've seen Teen Wolf, so maybe that's why.
I think the girl in this is hotter than the chick from Teen Wolf, to be honest. But I mean, no, they're both cute and they're both blonde, but no, it's not the same girl. But that is a fucking great comparison with the boof Pamela thing versus whatever the hot chick's name in this movie, and then that goth. I know she's not goth
or whatever she's supposed to be. Yeah.
Fucking Winona Ryder.
Franny. Her name's Franny. She's like, I mean, I know we'll get there eventually, but she basically says outright to him that she wants to fuck him. Like, oh, we need to bond.
Yeah, talk to Casper the Ghost or whatever his fucking name is.
Yeah, so weird. So he freaks out. He says he's going to realize that's us who set him up. Who else would do it? Because this guy also gave a teacher a note telling him and signs it in Jerry's name. Oh, God. Like, why would you sign it in anybody's name? Like, you could literally just say, hey, this guy's a knife. I'm not going to say who I am because I'll be killed for this, but you got to do it because I heard he's going to stab some kid after school. Just go look at it. So Buddy somehow puts it all together, even knows what kind of car Jerry drives, and stabs his steering wheel.
How would he know that? Because the license plate says Supermom?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, how the fuck would he know? Jerry tries to escape, gets in the car. There's a fucking note pinned to the steering wheel with a switchblade, and it says, the bell rings at 3. There is no escape. Be there. Car won't start, not even a click. He gets out of the car, looks under the hood. I can't even tell what the fuck is going on with that engine because I know nothing about cars, but it looks like
he cut all the fucking wires to it. It's hilarious.
Went in there, gun blades and just destroyed it.
It's just like the beginning of Commando, Ghoul. Remember?
Yeah, right.
When Arnold lifts the hoods and pulls out all the wires and slams it down.
And then here comes the Duker out of nowhere on a golf cart. Ugh. And have you all ever seen Shocker? Wes Craven?
Yeah.
Shocker? Okay, you know him as Horse Pinker, right? Yeah.
He's also X-Files.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
He's like their kind of like higher up in that show for a while.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, he's questioning Jerry. Where are you going? What happened? He finds a knife.
Yeah. Then he goes to the principal's office, explains it to the principal. He actually tells him the truth. And he says, that is the most preposterous thing I've ever heard in my life. So it's just basically telling you that the movie itself is preposterous. Like, they're just like the fourth wall thing. Doesn't believe him. I like how he even double checks and calls the teacher asking if he found a note.
Yeah, because they had said earlier in that, I think it was like right before, like Jerry wanted to call it off. And they didn't get the switchblade out in time.
Right.
And so then he's like, oh, I'll go to his friend Vincent or whatever. The nerdy kid's like, oh, I'll go take the note off and then we'll just like call the whole thing off, whatever. So then you realize it comes a bunch of scenes later so Vincent did end up getting the sign or the note off before the principal saw it.
Which is weird.
But he just didn't. Yeah. But there was no communication. So he like all these people are just basically like fucking it up for Jerry.
Right. But it's weird because if he got the note, then that means all Buddy did was open his locker and see a knife in there and then just walk over and stab his steering wheel, because it's not like any teachers confronted him or anything like that, or they confronted him after he found it and stabbed, like nothing. He just figured, oh, he must be trying to frame me and he's probably going to tell someone soon.
Yeah, because like I think that's like as like you eventually realize this throughout the movie is that Buddy is actually really smart.
Right, yeah, which is really weird.
He just wants to be fucking left alone the whole movie.
Right.
And that's all. This is just a bunch of these people bothering him.
He's not the bad guy in this movie.
No, not at all.
People keep fucking with him, and he just reacts to it. He shows up to school. He doesn't say a fucking word. They're trying to fuck with him about doing like an interview and shit and planting this illegal evidence against him and all this shit.
Yeah,
just wants to be left alone, and all these people are just putting themselves in his way, and he's just, like you said, he just reacts.
And unfortunately, he has the ability to do something about it.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So the accounting club made pools if he could last more than 3 minutes. I thought they were going to have sex or something. I was like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, what's with that guy wearing, like, that Russian beret?
Yeah!
I thought it was Steven Seagal. The priest?
Oh my god, a priest in Death Warrant wore a red beret too.
Oh my god.
Everybody's with the berets in these action 90s movies.
Yeah, oh my god. That kid though, another thing, he's just a weird looking kid. He's got this weird like outfit on him, and it's just like he's just another side bit character that just like adds to like this fucking crazy character filled high school. It's awesome.
So Jerry asks Craig to help him. He's on the football team. He's gigantic. And he says, can you talk alone? And he goes, if you're a fag.
Yes, he does.
Everybody keeps assuming.
That is I guess the worst thing you could say to someone back then.
He's like, she's like, find out where Craig Maddie, what class he's in, and then finds a way to like get me to meet him. He's like, oh yeah, he's in ceramics. That guy takes ceramics.
Yeah.
But then they show later when he's out on the field, he's holding a ceramic glass. Like, it's just like funny. It's like this jock has taken this like what would be seen as like a not jock like type fucking class. It's just really funny. But yeah, he's holding like a little blue teacup.
holy shit.
Yeah, so he beat up some other kid for $100, and for whatever reason, this wasn't like 30 years ago, but for whatever reason, this time it's $450. And he's like, what the fuck, dude? He goes, hey, you want to do it or not? So $450 in like 1988 or whatever this was, that's literally like $1,500 today.
Jesus. Thank you. I have that in my notes. Can you...
Would you pay anybody $1,500?
He's like $450. He goes, inflation, man.
Yeah.
Inflation in like 6 years.
All these movies keep coming to our real life today.
Yeah.
Well, then he says too, I think the reason why he only did it for the other kid for $100 was because the other kid had asthma.
Asthma. Yep.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hawkins had asthma.
And he goes, yeah. I have hypoglycemia. He's like, well, have a Snickers bar. Get the fuck away from me. But I need $450.
But they got the right guy to play Craig Maddie. He just looks like that big, like, not like overly buff, but just like big, like corn-fed, Nebraska-raised, you know, fucking offensive lineman football guy that could just wreck anybody.
So now Jerry gets the bright idea to get the $450 from the school store. He tries to break open the register, which was there was like a little thing alluding to that when he was selling that girl stuff and the register wouldn't open.
Yeah, foreshadowing for sure.
So now we're like, oh, well, that makes sense, I guess. It's not just a random thing. It didn't work before. So he hits it with a fire extinguisher and fucking destroys.
First, he tries to open it by busting it with a plastic globe. Then he goes to get the fucking fire extinguisher. And it still doesn't open until like 10 seconds later.
Right.
I love that. I found this scene to be really funny. Like after that, 'cause I was like, the robbery is actually really tense with setting up the way the movie is. It's like him being desperate to get that money so he can get out of the fight. And all his attempts to do it are just like the movie itself. All of his desperate attempts to get out of the fight. And it just ends up fucking him over more and more.
It's the movie in a nutshell, basically.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, he eventually gets it open, steals the cash. So then the guy who owns the school store shows Jerry this store, and he's, like, explaining it to him. Like, can you believe this? This is horrible.
Jeffrey Tambor fucking hands it up.
How many times, not to mention hypoglycemia, but how many times in this movie do they hit you over the head with what the term grand theft means? They explain that like four or five times. I thought it was only $500. Oh, grand theft, grand theft, grand theft. This movie should have been called Grand Theft.
Grand Theft High.
Exact. Yes, for sure. That's what it should have been called.
And inflation goes up. I think now it's $5,000, not $500.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Jeffrey Tambor freaking out over that thing. He's like so serious about it.
God damn it!
And he's oh, it's great. Like,
somehow, like, he uses this like crazy like analogy. He's like, whoever is responsible for this should not be in this school and should be plucked from this environment like a burgeoning cancer of the colon. It's like something fucking insane.
A burgeoning cancerous growth deep inside the colon. Like, who fucking talks like that?
So then this corn-fed football player confronts Buddy in the library.
Oh, God.
And it is, like, Buddy, first he, like, does something. He bumps into him or something, or bumps into the whole table or whatever.
He bumps the table with his leg, yeah.
Yeah, and Buddy is pretty calm about that, because I guess he knows he doesn't have to rush for anybody. He'll kick your ass in due time.
First of all, how would Craig Maddie know that Buddy Vril is in the goddamn library sitting reading? Like, he finds him instantly.
Yeah.
And is that where you would think Buddy is? Again, they're trying to paint him like, this guy's not doing anything wrong. He's minding his business. He's fucking sitting there reading Old Yeller. And here comes someone just to fuck with him. And you see what happens.
I love Buddy's replies when he's like, yeah, he remember me? It's like, oh, we played football together. And then he stands up and he's like, yeah. And you were the puss who always bled.
He has a lot of comebacks.
Which I love. I love that they let him, like, not only just be like this fit, because a movie like this in, like, say, the John Hughes version, this Buddy character wouldn't even talk. He would just be physically right. Cuffed.
Dumb Neanderthal who has no good lines to say. Yeah.
Yeah. And they give Buddy not only, like, the ability to back all his shit up, but he says some of the best shit talking lines. Oh, my God.
I hear you're giving Jerry Mitchell a hard time, man. Yeah. And it's going to get even harder. And then he starts poking him in the chest. You aren't going to do shit to him, asshole. And Buddy looks down, snaps his finger like a fucking matchstick, and lays him the fuck out with one shot, dude.
Yeah, knocks down every single shelf in the library. And the greatest part of that, the payoff of that, was not only the great visual of everything falling over, but then it knocks over the ones that Jerry and his buddy was hiding behind. So then he sees, oh, you were watching all this?
And then I love he just does the...
Yeah, bloody finger. Yeah.
Like, I love how nobody would confront or look for this kid. You just destroyed the library as if he could go through his next 4 or 5 classes and lunch with nobody saying, hey, bro, we heard about what you did. Come with us. Like,
yeah,
nothing.
He fucking lays him out. All the books go flying, shelves go down. And then Buddy slowly just like he walks as slow as anyone I've seen since Dick Warlock played Michael Myers in Halloween 2.
Yes.
Wow. He did it again. So, yeah, like, was the librarian not there? Was she killed by one of the shelves? Like, how come no one's stopping him and saying, whoa, you just can't leave. You're fucking suspended. Like, nothing.
No.
So his friend is so supportive, and Jerry fucking turns on him, blaming him for this whole entire thing. Like, what an asswipe. Like, you could do mental gymnastics and figure out, okay, yeah, I guess if you really want to twist everything, sure, he's responsible for maybe this, that, the other thing. But, dude, you confronted this guy in the bathroom. You talked about drugs. You could have let that narc comment go over. You patted his shoulder and everything else. This is, oh, I guess he did. No, he's the one who told him to do the news. No, but the teacher, I thought, selected him.
Oh, I thought his buddy Vince did.
No, the teacher didn't. There wasn't that weird moment where the teacher went through all the names and skipped them all and went right to Jerry.
Well, yeah, but I just kind of thought Vince was in charge of that whole paper thing.
No, you're both right. The teacher handed it to him, but Vincent is the one who assigns everyone.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, you guys are both correct.
So it was his fault ultimately for starting this whole fucking thing.
But still, he didn't know it would turn to this, and he was so supportive, trying to help every way possible. So that was really a scumbag move from Jerry, and it's sad because I thought that it would have resolved quicker. But this guy does not show up again in the whole movie until the very end when he jumps on him. So it's like really weird.
That shit. When we get to that shit fucking.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So funny.
It's just like when the girl jumped on, what's his name? William Zabka in, Just One of the Guys, right?
Yeah. So Vince tells him that Craig gave the money back because he felt bad, but Vince let him keep $100 for his troubles. And instead of Jerry being like, oh, well, fuck, at least I got $350 back, he's pissed off that he didn't get all the money back. Right. So him and Vince have that little falling out right there. Vince is like, you can keep your sucking blood money.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's like saying, well, I gave him $350 of your money, like today's money. It would be like saying, oh, I let your friend keep $350. I'd be like, what?
Right.
You let him keep $350
for getting his ass kicked. Right.
Like, that is outrageous. I paid him $1,500 and he didn't do anything, and you gave him $350 back. So, his new idea is to get detention. He does this book report thing where he's smoking a cigarette, he has sunglasses on, he turns to the teacher,
he's talking about some porno book that he's reading.
Yeah, Honey Goes to Hollywood.
Honey Goes to Hollywood.
I actually Googled to see if this was a real book, and it's
no
not.
No way, it's not. Okay.
I'm surprised nobody wrote it since then. They had 40
That's
years.
That's true.
Yeah, this teacher's totally getting turned on, despite her lack of an upper lip. She's so into this. Yeah. She was really good. I thought she did really good for what she was doing, but
yeah,
she even looked the part besides her mouth. Like, it's a shame because she really, I really liked her.
Now, Alex, are you familiar with her from anything else before you watch this?
Dude, I feel like I know this woman. I don't know what I know her from.
Okay, so she was in a slasher from 1980 called He Knows You're Alone, which was the first movie that Tom Hanks ever had a credit for. He's in like one quick scene.
Hmm.
And then she's also in another horror movie from, I think, 79 called Savage Weekend. And she actually gets naked in it. So, yeah, I have a boner for this chick.
You know, someone else who got their first credit, who was just in one quick scene, was Dana Carvey, who was in Halloween 2.
Halloween 2!
One of the reporters.
Yep.
I love in this scene, though, when she talks about, she's like, I hope, Jerry, I hope this is going somewhere. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, it is. And then he's like, what's your favorite book? And then she's like, of course, the name of the book is Turn of the Screw. I'm just like, oh my God.
Oh my God, that is so funny.
Then he kisses her and fucking faints.
Faints. Oh. And yeah, wakes up in the nurse's office.
Now that's what I call a book report.
So then he kisses his ugly friend, which I don't know what.
Okay. We gotta pause here. That's the weirdest scene of the fucking movie. Like that's a scene that should have been on a bonus feature for the deleted scenes, like on a DVD.
Yeah.
That scene does nothing other than just putting Jerry back in the student store so his boss, cop, can walk in on him. Yeah. He could have just gone in there just to like hide or just like take a breather, right, or get a snack. But she's like, there's like this fucking, there's like a bed looking thing there. And I'm like, since when in student stores have beds in them? But then he says it's like a display table or something.
Yeah, but she has like candles and stuff set up too.
Candles, they kiss, and then she has the weirdest fucking reaction after they kiss. Like she just kissed fucking like Leatherface or something. Like slowly backs, like just like slowly backs away or something. She wanted them to bond, which clearly she wanted them to fuck in that room.
Right.
It's middle of the day.
Yeah, really weird. And she knows what he's going through. Everybody does. Like, is that really going to be on his? I couldn't even get a heart on that day. If, like, literally someone offered me that, I'd be like, I'm sorry, I can't get my mind off what's happening. This is exactly not going to work. You can pump me up with whatever you want. It's not getting there. It would be like shooting pool with a rope. I'd be like, this is not happening. This guy, this like an investigator, a juvie guy, comes in. He totally thinks it's an inside job. So now we have like so many things hanging over this kid's head.
Jerry Orbach, isn't that his name?
No, that's not Jerry Orbach. Jerry Orbach was the dude who was in a Law and Order, and then we just Out for Justice.
Oh, okay.
This guy, yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, he was. I know he's been he's a memorable face in a bunch of stuff, but I remember most. He's the crazy like book detective in an episode of Seinfeld, Mr. Book.
Yeah, doesn't he always play a cop or a detective or something? No matter what he's in.
Yeah, always a hard ass kind of type. Yeah.
Yeah.
He plays it really well though.
Yeah, Buddy somehow gets sat next to Jerry in a classroom. This teacher must be oblivious. Buddy keeps looking at Jerry's paper and it seems to be like signaling to him to let me cheat or something like that.
Right.
They just keep looking at each other, so it's really confusing what happens later on. But well, Jerry gets caught as if he's cheating.
Well, hold on. First of all, that teacher, that dude, he's got no neck. He's a head sitting on top of a body. He's fucking. He looks like a tick about to pop, dude.
Like Christmas Story? Like the brother?
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like.
They go to the principal's office, and he does not believe that he knows Jerry's lying and taking the rap for this kid. Like, Jerry's whole life is going to hell, but it all seems to be not that important compared to what's happening at 3 o'clock. Like, the anticipation of this fight is far worse than anything that is compiling onto his reputation or life at this during this entire day.
I gotta mention, because I basically brought that movie Class of 1999 up on every fucking show we've done, the principal is also one of the robot teachers in that movie.
Who is not a robot teacher in that movie? Every movie we do, someone is a robot teacher.
Dude, Class of 1999, I just get... Someday.
Yeah, I guess we're going to have to do that at some point.
Yeah, otherwise we won't stop talking about it.
Alex, the main character in it is Eyeball Chambers from Stand By Me.
Eyeball?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit?
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, the puppet kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the main character, yeah.
Well, so they have them do the math problem in front of this guy, and somehow Buddy gets the right. And this isn't like, you know, 74 times 36. Like, this is like those a math problem where you have to know like those symbols and all that shit.
It's like square rooting and shit. Right? Fuck yeah.
They show the textbook later in the movie, and it's Algebra 2. So yeah, it's advanced shit, and Buddy knows it to a T.
Yeah, and even though it's totally useless in real life, Buddy knows it. So Jerry looks like an asshole again. So he's chatting with his buddy in the gym, and eventually, I mean, he's chatting with Buddy in the gym.
Buddy,
he looks like quite a bully,
quite a bad boy.
Quite the bad boy.
He's chatting with quite the bad boy in the gym. And Buddy eventually accepts $350 to not fight.
Like, I really like this scene a lot. It is like, it kind of gets, not, I wouldn't say emotional, but like the way it takes what he says to Jerry, obviously, like, it's just, and then Jerry's face is just fucking like, when he's like, "You've got to be one of the biggest pussies I've ever met. You didn't even try. How's that make you feel?" And Jerry's face is just like pure, like even worse than being getting the shit kicked out of you physically.
Just total deflation. Like, yeah. Back then, if you called someone a pussy, that's basically like the most degrading thing you could call somebody. If you like guy to guy.
I thought if you're a fag was.
You're right. That was the worst.
Yeah, that was the second worst. Pussy. I love Richard Tyson's. I gotta say, I do love his voice and delivery all the time. Like, even in Kindergarten Cop, I like all of it. His voice never squeaks up and gets high and any emotion in any way. It's always this, like,
total monotone. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't get loud like he does in Kindergarten Cop. Like you would even think, like, in the initial bathroom scene, when he like rams Jerry up against the mirror, you would think of him. You would be like, "Well, I'm angry now. I got to do something to work it off." Like, you would think that would be the way to go. But no, he just stays like this, like, menacing, one monotone fucking way. It's awesome.
And you know, Ghoul, the one guy who probably should have done that too, but never did, was Jax in Sons of Anarchy. You ever notice that he always gets pretty squeaky? He's like,
"Yeah,
I bet that's the goddamn Baba Bars." Like, whenever he's like yelling at something, he always goes,
"They knocked over our bikes."
Yeah, he does the squeaky thing, and it's interesting because Jax is more like what Buddy is than probably Buddy would be as a kid. And he does do the squeaky thing. So it's definitely an interesting choice to really keep it down every time.
Keeps, like, this mystique of, like, all the students think that he's just this fucking monster.
It gives you that mystique because you're almost like a robot, because we all have emotions and it's an impulsive reaction thing. And Buddy doesn't ever seem to have that. He is just completely in control all the time, which is kind of scarier in a way. You know what I mean? Now Jerry feels like complete shit, and he just fucking runs over to Buddy's locker. He says, "Hey, I'm no pussy, asshole. I want my money back," and all this stuff. He goes, "The fight's on. Me and you in the parking lot at 3 o'clock, even though he's like, "No refunds." And he basically just called. Like, imagine if you just said that to Buddy regardless, calling him an asshole, and Buddy still has no emotion because he's waiting till 3 o'clock. So why do you think Buddy cared so much about waiting till 3 o'clock? Does he just want to torture him mentally for 8 hours? Because he punched the kid at the library right away. He, you know, it's not like he's against fighting on school grounds or during school time or anything.
Yeah.
There's no real reason to wait till he slammed him into the mirror in the bathroom. He could have just punched him out right there.
Wow, that's a good point. I've never even thought about that before. He could have wasted him right there.
Yeah.
But he wanted a scheduled fight.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that, what's wow.
Yeah, I was like, kind of, until you just mentioned it, it was a good point about, like, he has no qualms about fucking up school property while it's happening. Because I was like, I thought it was in, like, the lieu of, like, because they show him being, like, a pretty, like, exceptional student. and he just wants to be left alone. So you think, like, maybe he has some sort of respect for, like,
right,
that kind of thing. But yeah, no, you're right. He doesn't do that. So the mental torture thing, yeah, I never thought of that. That's a good point.
Even going to the fact he's willing to punch the fucking principal in the face. Like, you're willing to do that. So where does the moral compass go with let's wait till 3 o'clock? So Buddy loads brass knuckles.
Which is insane.
Yeah, like, what a pussy move, dude. You're fighting a guy.
Have you all ever actually worn a pair of brass knuckles or iron knuckles or anything like that?
I've
put them on. Yeah.
Like, if I had, my grandfather had a pair back when I was like 14 or so that I think were left over from like the fucking 60s. It's a pretty intoxicating feeling when you put those things on, knowing you could literally break someone's fucking face.
Yeah.
If you hit them with that.
Right.
Well, they have an updated version now, which I actually have a pair of. They're called sap gloves.
Really?
And they're like these gloves that have like these pouches on them, and it has the fucking metal for it, but then it has like knuckle reinforcement and finger reinforcement on it. You can literally punch brick and you don't feel fucking shit.
Wow.
It's crazy. Wow. Yeah, it's like a modernized version of it. It's scary.
You have those?
Yeah.
Do you fight a lot?
Oh, yeah.
No. I went off. It's probably about like 12 or so years ago, I went through a phase like when I got like my first like online card that I could use. I was just buying like dumb knives and fucking dumb shit online for a while, like just absurd shit. I didn't need it. I was never like a kid like that growing up. Still now, I've always been like, just, I've been like, leave me alone, but I've never been like a confrontational person. I'm like, I just stay out of the way, but I just buy these things just because I like having cool shit.
God, Alex, we're so old.
It's true, you never know.
Yeah, and one day somebody might be kicking down your door and you'll go grab your dumb shit and stab him in the throat and punch him in the face.
So I have like random, like, I bought a couple machetes off Amazon a couple years ago. Never going to use them.
I got machetes.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't have random machetes? Random machetes sitting around their house.
That's why we buy guns, just in case. You never know.
Yeah, exactly.
So the, pussy move with the brass knuckles. No offense, Pat. Just kidding. So the parking lot is full of the kids cheering. They both go out there. It's a great moment. Now we're excited. It's almost like the end of a Rocky movie or something. More like Rocky V, but still, we're waiting for the big fight here. He knocks out Mr.
O'Rourke. Yeah,
he
touches Buddy. Principal tells him to leave, and Buddy says, "Sorry, Mr. O'Rourke, I just can't do that." O'Rourke says, "Well, let me give you a little help." Touches him on the shoulder, boom, lays out the fucking principal one
so
shot.
Good. Oh, I love it.
Yep. He throws Jerry's bitch on the floor.
Oh my, yeah, that's a fucking, like, he just grabs her by the face and just tosses her.
He legit grabs that bitch by the face and slingshots her across that park.
Oh my god, she flies.
But I put it in super slow motion when I watch it. And if you watch it, with the part where she goes flying into the crowd and like two people catch her, it's an Asian person. I can't tell if it's a girl or a guy, but it's an Asian person with a wig on that goes flying into the crowd.
Just like Arnold's stunt double in T2 when he drove off that, remember, Pat, when he drove off and his bike lands on the ground and it looks like an Asian Arnold? Yeah. He punches Jerry in the chest. Jerry kicks his knee. So he's doing some kind of fighting back, which is interesting. He throws Jerry onto a car. Then he knocks out Darby, or what do you guys call him, Duke or something?
Duke, yeah.
The Duker.
Yeah, knocks out the Duker.
I love how that tough shit, the Dean of Students or whatever, just kind of like fades back into the crowd. Like, he's like, yeah, fuck this. Like,
Yeah, the Dean, yeah.
Well, I like when Jerry gets up, he's like, come on, you asshole. Come on, you peckerhead. Let's see what you got. Peckerhead, like, is that really the best he could come
he
up?
Sounds like Tommy Jarvis trying to get Jason to walk into the lake.
Pecker,
come on, you pussy, come on, maggot head.
It's weird how every time Buddy lands a punch, it slows down. Like, Buddy will land a punch and then there's a lull,
right,
allowing someone else to enter the frame. Yeah. Then Buddy's something else, then someone else enters the frame.
Right.
It's like they slow it down after each individual shot.
Yeah. he punched Buddy in the nose. I thought he was going to do a Simpsons thing and go, "You made me bleed my own blood." You remember that? Are you guys Simpsons guys?
No. I'm like spotty, like not huge, but.
I love that part, though, because Jerry actually lands a legit clean punch on Buddy's face.
Yeah.
And Buddy's like frozen, like he almost doesn't know what to do. He's looking around.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, this has never happened before. So then he charges at Jerry and winds up with this bizarre roundhouse right hand that it's like a Clubber Lang punch from Rocky III. It's just like completely swings it from his side.
Right. It was weird for sure.
It's like he's throwing a fucking tetherball around a pole. It's total sidearm.
Yeah, he's got like a swing.
It blasts Jerry and makes his nose bleed.
Yeah, and then he goes and grabs for his brass knuckles. It's like, dude, you're not losing exactly. I think we could leave those out.
Yeah, do you really need brass knuckles to beat up this fucking dweeb?
That makes it very questionable. That's like he's kind of flawed now because of that.
Right.
He's like I see it as like he's just really like he's like, all right, you've annoyed me this much throughout the day. Now I'm really gonna make you fucking hard.
I'm fucking dusting you right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. That's just unnecessary punishment for that. Yeah.
It is. So this is the part where the friend he totally betrayed earlier in the movie jumps on top of Buddy.
They fucking launch this kid out of nowhere. It's so fucking funny.
I have it in my notes. I said he comes flying off the top rope like Macho Man Savage in his prime. Literally flying through the fucking air.
Mm-hmm.
Slams Buddy against the fucking van or whatever it is. Like, yeah, legit gets, slams him hard.
Right.
Yeah, he gets a few good shots in on him, too.
Yeah.
And then when Buddy knees him in the balls, his face is so fucking funny. I'm like, I'm about to screenshot that and start sending that in the text.
Yeah.
He just, like, freezes in this... I can't even reproduce the face he does.
The face is so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And then you hear the principal, "Don't fuck this up, Mitchell."
Oh my God.
Yeah, so the music starts playing, this climatic music, and they're circling each other. His fucking dork friend lifts up, "Kill him, Jer!" Like, all of a sudden he's from like Oklahoma or something. "Kill him, Jer!"
Yeah.
And then the sister's like, "Break his face!" And his Beetlejuice girlfriend's like, "Rip his head off!" And then the principal lifts up, "Don't fuck this up, Mitchell." So right there, you're like, okay, everybody is on Jerry's side right now.
It's amazing. I think the reason why the "don't fuck this up, Mitchell" thing is so funny, not only just because of the way it is, but the quick camera cut, zooming in on him waking up and just doing it, it is so fucking silly.
Dude, the cuts and edits in this movie are fucking lights out.
Yeah, that's so much energy, and they add so much pizzazz to this movie.
Yeah.
And it was not a normal thing in the 80s, really. Like, not that... Like, it was really ambitious director, and I think he put this movie over the top. Even though it was a total dud in the box office and all that stuff, I think it was just going up against the wrong things, and it was just... Didn't get... This is one of those movies that probably didn't get proper promotion and stuff like that.
Oh, definitely not.
Right.
Not that I was there when it did, but even now, obviously, people still don't know what this movie is.
So, I don't know if you saw this, but... Steven Spielberg was originally one of the producers for this movie, but by the time it was done and shot and edited, he was not pleased with how it turned out, so he removed his name.
Wow.
And that hurt, too, the box office.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they heard his name on it, they would have dug it. But it was kind of the anti-80s movies in a lot of ways. Like, there's plenty of them, but this is one of the ones that they're trying to be one of the crowd, but they're not. Like, this was totally something of its own animal, but sort of trying to be in line with those movies. So the combination just wasn't what people would be gravitating to. So unfortunately, it fell by the wayside, but we have it as a cult classic now. All this happens with a jumping on. He drops the brass knuckles. Jerry picks up the knuckles, hides them behind his back. Buddy goes to punch him, misses, and Jerry pops him with the brass knuckles. He lays him out. It is over. The fight's over. Everyone's cheering for Jerry. But then we get to this really bizarre moment. He pulls a Michael Myers from Halloween 1. Not 2. And they go to say something or do something with him. And they look and he's gone.
Oh, Buddy's gone. Yeah.
How has Buddy disappeared? He is 6 feet tall. He's the guy everyone's focused on. There had to be 40 kids at one point looking at him the entire time he was on the ground.
Dude, the whole fucking school was watching that fight.
Yeah.
But I mean, even if you just said 40 wouldn't take their eyes off of him. Somebody saw this guy get up and leave. Like, he just doesn't disappear. Like, it is out of this world. What are they trying to convey with that? What is this all about? Then we get to the next day or something. He's back in that school place, the store. And the kids are going to basically pay for the money he stole by buying sheets of paper for $1 each. And Buddy walks in. So after knocking the fuck out of the principal, doing all he did, the library, everything, the fight.
And don't forget the cop shows back up at the end of the fight and he's looking for both of them. He's like, so he's still like, yeah, there's still so many open aspects about like this guy's practically like a fugitive.
Right. And he's still not suspended or anything. He walks into the school store, drops off the $350 and kind of smirks at Jerry as if to say, pretty good, kid, or something like that.
Yeah, he gives the slightest bit of a smile, but you have to be looking for it, though.
I was doing that last night. I was like, all right. Yeah, I was like, where's he? I was like, where's the, like, slight not approval? And it's, the, like you said, Chris, it is the slight, like, you have to be looking
the
for
the absolute slightest bit of a smile, like, good job, dude. You got me.
Yeah, the same one he gave the kid who gave him the information of where his son and daughter are in kindergarten. Same smile.
I would say the ending, or the what you could do, maybe with when Buddy was like disappeared during the fight, maybe if the movie ended there, could have been setting it up for a sequel, like, you know, 3:00 High 2:04 High.
I like how if Jerry knocks him out with those fucking brass knuckles, he takes them off and just throws it on Buddy's chest like, fuck you.
Yeah, were the knuckles on the ground when the ground was empty?
I think they were, actually.
Really?
I might be wrong, but I want to say that they were.
Wow. So then the teacher shows up. She makes out with Jerry. Like, she just lost her job. Like, wow. She just threw her career away to make out with a dork.
You would think. Not in the 80s, though.
Yeah, maybe it was okay then, you know?
It was fine.
It probably was, you know?
Hello, Jerry. And she, I don't know about you guys, I think she looks pretty hot in that scene.
Oh, dude, if she had lips, I would definitely talk to her.
Well, what does she say to him as she walks away? She's like, we have many more book reports to get through or something like that. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you're not even hiding this. Yeah, it's out of this world, at least for today. So, that's, 3:00 High. Wow.
I wish that fat math teacher, that dude, would have showed up and, like, started kissing Jerry's sister.
Jesus Christ.
So this is an interesting movie. Like, what is kind of the worst day of this guy's life, Jerry's life, it turns out to be the day that turned everything around for him. Like, all the kids admire him. He's now the thing of whispers. He's now sought at from teachers, the hot girl, the ugly Beetlejuice girl, like, everything. Everyone's into him now. He's best friends with his dork friend again. Everyone respects him. And now he's a total fucking legend for knocking out a guy that is something only, like, folklore, like we said. How many sheets of paper are you buying for $1? That's all I can think of, sorry.
Oh, that's perfect. No, that's great, dude.
Out of 5, are you buying for Jerry to pay back his $450 theft? Ghoul.
All right, so this is, like, obviously, like, I can gush about this movie on and on. It's amazing. Crazy how it's still highly underrated and doesn't get the recognition that it deserves. But the story goes on really fast. You can feel the tension and the chaos as it builds and builds, which is tough to do, especially when you're going for, like, a comedy movie in this era, too. And it works enough with, like, it doesn't get – I don't really think there's anything corny about this movie either. Like, there's no points where it's just like, eh. Like, no, it's, like, it's just so different from what was coming out at the time. And even some of the stuff that comes out now, it's, like, completely, like, just no comparison. And Yeah, Casey, however you say his last name, and Richard Tyson, just awesome, like, chemistry when it comes to, like, the villain and hero and villain kind of thing.
Yeah, they did play off each other nice.
Yeah, like, really good chemistry there. And this, for me, is a fucking 4.5 out of 5 for me.
Nice.
I love this movie.
Chris, how many sheets of paper are you buying out of 5 to make up for the grand theft of Jerry?
So, this movie sucked me in from the very first time I saw it, dude. Like, I was 14 years old. I just randomly watched it, loved it, taped it, watched it over and over and over, owned it on DVD, Blu-ray. I love the fucking chemistry, like Ghoul said, between Casey Shamashko and Richard Tyson. It's just the perfect pairing of not a total dork, but kind of a dork versus, like, the badass bully, even though, again, he's not really a bully. He's just going about his business, but still. This one just, like, slides under the radar for people, it seems like. I feel like if you didn't catch this back in the day, which was kind of shocking to me, Ghoul, when you said you wanted to review this, because you're so much younger than us, but you said you had older siblings or someone you worked with or whoever it was that turned you onto this. But yeah, this, to me, this is like a hidden gem, it seems like. Love it. I've watched it consistently throughout the years. 5 out of 5.
Nice. Love it. Hell yeah.
I'm very sad I did not. I'm one of those guys who it did go under the radar. No one ever talked about it till Chris. Oddly enough, I already owned the Blu-ray without even knowing it.
Wow. Cool.
What?
Yeah, I had it for years, I guess. Whenever the Shout...
Without knowing it?
Yeah. Whenever the Shout Factory thing came out. Whatever year that was, I've had it since then.
That's like two or three years ago.
So you bought it but didn't know it?
No, Michael J. used to just dub Blu-rays for me and, like, send me packages with, like, 50 of them in each one.
Wow, okay.
And the ones that, whatever stuck out to me, I kind of just put in zip folders, and the ones that sounded dumb or whatever, I just gave away to other people. So, this was one of them. Somehow I kept it. I don't even know why I kept it. But when you talked about it about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, you made me watch it or something like that, like in October or so. And I didn't think it was all that great. I like Richard Tyson and all that, but I just thought it was, it wasn't that great. And then I never thought about it again. So then when the Ghoul talked about it and the enthusiasm, then the both of you started, like, going back and forth, and you had to shut yourselves up because you were like, oh, we got to save this for the show. I was like, wow, maybe this really is amazing. And then it's funny that it's a Richard Tyson weekend we're doing here. So I just watched it, like, it became great to me as I was sitting there, and I started to appreciate every little scene. It was really strange. Like, I now realize what I just didn't see the first time. I was like, wow, every single thing about this is really good. I like everything, I love the ending. I love everything. So I'm really glad I finally came around, and I hope that... I know there's a lot of you who listen to our reviews that don't watch the movie or anything. If you're doing this time...
Ooh, watch this fucking movie.
People I know listen to Predator 2 without watching it. That you could pretty much just imagine by our review or whatever, but this is the kind of movie I really think... You guys, if you like those 80s comedies and stuff, and this one slipped under the radar, don't let it slip forever. Check it out.
I mean, this is listed as a comedy slash drama, but the comedy is really, really subtle in this movie. It's basically a drama. I mean, yes, there's comedy, but it's not like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's just like,
I see it as like
a smirk.
I kind of, what I think I wrote in my notes, I was like, it's kind of like an absurdist comedy. Like, it's just like... Right. Just the weirdest, like, shit that is funny in it. Like, not traditionally funny.
Yeah, but it's basically a drama, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's weird, right? I just said comedy just because, but yeah, I never really thought about it.
Yeah, it's completely different than something like 16 Candles or Breakfast Club or something
like
that.
And that might be another reason it fell under the radar.
Yeah. Right.
Like, Breakfast Club also is not a comedy.
Oh, absolutely. That's a total drama with some comedic elements sprinkled in throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out what happened here, but don't miss it, guys, if you never watched it.
Alex, what's your rating for it?
Oh, yeah, right. how many sheets of paper am I buying? I'm going to, for now, this is really good for me not even caring about it before. I give it, I'll buy 4 sheets out of 5.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I really like it.
Awesome.
Yep.
Fuck yeah.
Glad we did a Richard Tyson weekend, and it just makes me want to watch more. I'm going to actually do some research and find out if anybody even talks about this guy, what they think his like third or fourth best movie is, and maybe I will check. No, I will check those out in the coming weeks. So, yep, hopefully one of them are review worthy too.
Let's hope so.
So that's it. School's out. It's past 3 o'clock. See you next weekend.